Hello and welcome to another episode of The Joint Venture, the podcast that delves deep into the global renewable energy and infrastructure sectors. I'm John McNair, and this week we return after a short break with the first of two special episodes in partnership with Gowling WLG. In today's edition, we'll be heading straight into a conversation I recently had with Gareth Baker, who's a partner specialising in renewables at Gowling WLG, as well as Barney Coles, the Director of Clean Energy Infrastructure at renewables investor Capital Dynamics. Gareth, Barney and I got together to chat about the development of new projects in the UK renewables market, with a particular focus on those being progressed without the support of government incentives. We took stock of where the market is right now, how COVID-19 had affected Gareth and Barney's ways of working, as well as how the lockdown had impacted electricity prices and the knock-on consequences for projects' business cases. Then we moved on to talk about the tantalising prospect of the return of solar and onshore wind to the UK's Contracts for Difference support framework, and what that might mean for developers and investors who might have given up entirely on ever being able to access that revenue stream again after several years without it. Well, why don't we dive straight into the discussion to hear what was said on all of these topics, as well as many others. Well, Gareth and Barney, thanks for joining me here today on the podcast. And we're here, obviously, to talk about the development of UK subsidy-free renewables projects at the moment. So just to kick off very generally, firstly, and perhaps starting with you, Gareth, what would you say are the key considerations for project development in the subsidy-free segment at the moment?
Thanks, John. Well, the developers that we're working with are focused on the skills and the areas in which they continue to excel and be excellent. And, you know, those really comprise making sure that they're getting the right kind of land rights, making sure that they're getting a good and fair deal on a grid connection, but also looking at the planning. And on that, as an area, we're seeing a number of projects where perhaps they didn't quite make it in the original subsidy phase. And as they are right now, they still don't add up economically. So a number of developers are going back in and they're looking at how they can adjust that planning in order to make the project work, which might be, for example, to make a wind farm reach higher heights on its tips, or it might be the size and scale of a particular development. What I would say finally is that I think a number of them are finding it refreshing that they're not necessarily chasing the next quarter. There was an awful lot of outside pressure in the rock days of that degradation date coming if you didn't get to a particular milestone by a particular date.
Yeah. So freeing in a sense, I suppose. Barney, what's your take on how the land lies at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, looking at things slightly from a more financial perspective, I think if you consider the developers' main drivers, I mean, they were developing with, you know, traditionally up until 2016 with a rock subsidy in mind, and you know, with that comes circa £100 a megawatt hour price for the power that those projects would end up generating. And obviously once the subsidies fell away, that revenue stream is halved. And as a result, you know, developers, in order to hit those sort of similar development premium that they were getting previously, are having to really rationalize their costs and optimize their sites. You know, Gareth mentioned the, you know, the tip height extensions. That's that's been a major aspect of what we've seen on the development side. But then also, you know, trying to really push the underlying contractors, you know, maintenance providers, you know, construction contractors on price. And I think what that's doing is it's putting more pressure on developers. It means that they've got to be a little bit more potentially commercial and, you know, really got to sweat every penny. It's much more of an American style model. And I think, but the other main aspect or main consideration really for developers is really on in offtake strategy and how that links to the ultimate finances of these projects. So before, under the subsidy regime, not a huge amount of thought really needed to go into that because developers knew the projects would end up being delivered under the ROC or whatever grandfathered amount it was. It was always going to get a ROC, and that was always going to be appealing to most of the financiers out there. Now, the developers now have a choice. They can either engage with private off-takers of the power under long-term arrangements with a certain buyer ultimately in mind, or they might choose the all-merchant route, which potentially doesn't deliver as much value to them, but it allows them to get projects away and sold and recycle that capital quickly. So these are the sort of things they maybe didn't have to think about so much before. These are really very much on their, have to be part of their thinking now, and who's going to end up buying these and when.
Obviously, we had a pretty tumultuous year this year, to say the least, but, in broad terms across the society and the economy, obviously, through COVID-19. Now, lots of people tout the resilience of renewables and also other kind of infrastructure sectors in the face of that, but there were, perhaps back at the start of the crisis, reports of kind of widespread construction cessations and delays. So to what extent, Barney, perhaps I'll stay with you for this one, to what extent did you experience that on projects that you have, and how perhaps will things sort of change in the construction segment going forward?
Fortunately, we didn't suffer from that. I think to a large extent it was fortunate that the timing of our projects just happened to miss that lockdown window. But as you said, there were a number of others out there who did suffer and experience issues as a result of the lockdown. I think generally speaking, the lockdown was was hard. I think construction, whilst it was locked down for a period, was locked down for less of a period. I think construction was the last two locked down and the first one out is due to the fact, I guess, that social distancing is slightly easier in that kind of world. I think what we're seeing now in terms of our projects that we are sort of hoping to construct this year and next year, we're seeing probably two main things. We're seeing the lead times on the delivery of wind turbines, particularly being sort of pushed out. For a number of reasons, the constituent elements of the turbine come from all over the world, and everybody has different kind of rules on imports and exports and delivery of parts, and so that's something that the turbine manufacturers are considering in the programs that they're promising the buyers of their turbines, and also they're not going out materially, but it's a couple of months here or there, and then on the actual construction side of things with underlying contractors, we're not seeing it. To a large extent, I think at this moment in time, there isn't much factoring in of another similar lockdown. But that said, I think as sort of asset owners and those that are kind of managing that construction process, we have to be mindful that that's a real possibility. So we do need to give ourselves sufficient cushion at the back end to deliver in time, whether that's, a financial sort of deadline or whether that's a grid connection deadline or whatever. And if those deadlines look at all at risk, it's paramount to have early engagement with whether it's the network operator or your finances or whoever. And, generally speaking, I think, the industry has been very understanding of the situation, and, everybody needs to sort of really get together and find solutions when these things come up. I mean, fortunately, nothing in our pipeline, is suffering or will suffer, but it's clear that the industry needs to kind of pull together really to work our way through these issues.
And Gareth, what are you seeing in that sense? I mean, does the crisis create more work in your in-tray and more things to consider when you're working through on deals and projects?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly has created issues for the industry. And I'd echo the comments that Barney made. People are trying to be pragmatic on these things. And again, comment I made earlier, that the fact that you aren't chasing a ROC deadline allows at least some breathing space. But what I would say we're seeing is I would draw a distinction between the subsidy-free projects where, you know, that candidly, they're not necessarily in construction yet. They're too early for construction. And I'll come on to those in a moment because there is a longer term impact. And then those projects which are in construction, which typically in our on our desk is often EFW projects and offshore wind. And you know, yes, there have been issues there. There have been some insolvencies in the supply chain, and there have been some delays, and that has certainly going to cause issues under the construction contracts where there's debates about, on the one hand, if you're the developer, I'd like some liquidated damages, and on the other hand, if you're, you know, constructing these things, you want to say that it's a force majeure event or things like that. I mean, that's detail. But those kinds of discussions are going on. And of course, as Barney has alluded to, where you've got finance in there, you've got a whole other range of questions to consider, like, is this going to send you into a default and your finance documents and what happens? But as I've said, we're not seeing that in the merchant world because, frankly, we're not seeing widespread construction activity there yet. A lot of stuff is earlier than that. But I think we're seeing two things happening. Naturally, the supply chain coloured by this experience is more risk averse. So as Barney has said, there's more building in of lead times. We're finding the debates on terms harder. And I think on pricing, I would say our experience is that at the start of the subsidy-free phase, the supply chain really did cut its cloth because it knew that it was vested in helping this industry become its success that I'm sure it will become. But, you know, we're seeing that pricing hardening or going up now as a result of what's happened, frankly.
And so Barney returns. Obviously, you know, you noted a few points there, the longer lead times on supply chains and other such issues. I mean, does that then, what impact is it having on the bottom line?
I think it might just be a function of the timing of our deployment more than anything. But I think we've been quite fortunate in the sense that those had already really factored into the returns that we're bidding at when we're looking to acquire projects. So we're not in a situation where we've acquired projects and suddenly this is hit and suddenly we're having to look at, you know, potential 3, 6, 12 month delays, which of course, if that were the case, you would then, start to drag some of the return and, you know, you would see those kind of issues. I think potentially just because we've not necessarily by design, but, you know, the way that we've timed a lot of what we've done is, you know, we've managed to kind of, you know, avoid those kind of problems. But yeah, without doubt, you know, there will be, you know, I guess those who were sort of mid-construction were locked down for 3 or 4 months and had staff furloughed and things like that. You know, clearly there will be some kind of drag on the financial return and issues with banks. But I think, you know, my sort of sense speaking around the industry is that, you know, like I said before, everybody's sort of in the same boat here and everybody's got, you know, requirements and pressures. And I think the kind of feedback I've heard is that, you know, the industry has been very accommodating around this, and it seems to be kind of, you know, solving itself. I think it's been quite sort of refreshing, really, to see the industry sort of realise that, you know, renewables is actually quite a relatively small sector in terms of, you know, the people involved, and actually, you know, as an industry, we've really got to kind of, you know, pull together, and, you know, renewables is, you know, is key, and there's a bigger picture here other than just, you know, Capital Dynamics or whoever. You know, we've all got to pull together and bring renewables to the forefront, and those kind of issues that might arise, you know, within industry are sort of, you know, secondary really in this situation.
One thing perhaps we haven't seen commented on much certainly in my kind of corner of the press is how you guys are experiencing doing things like deal origination and execution. It may be changing back to the old way now, potentially. But, you know, through platforms like Zoom and remotely and during lockdown, how was that, and how different is it, and is it changing back to the old way, or is it here for good now?
I have to admit I'm a little bit sort of skeptical of video calls and working from home and doing it that way and being remote and you're not having those sort of water cooler moments and that kind of thing. But I've been pleasantly surprised, as I think my wife has as well, about how it has worked and how, to a large extent, seamless it's been transitioning to this kind of sort of working arrangement. Certainly lockdown was a different experience, and with a 2-year-old not being in childcare, that's obviously quite challenging. But actually, you know, it worked very, very well. And I think it sort of feeds well into, you know, this sort of green economy, green recovery story around, you know, how do we sort of move out into, you know, a new way of being and a sort of a more sustainable way of living, and, you know, avoiding kind of, you know, congestion in London and sort of overuse of transport and that kind of thing. So I think all of that is going to be positive. On the actual sort of, you know, work side and the deal side, I think what was interesting is that we didn't really see any tailing off of activity in the sector, and it's quite a kind of hardened insulated sort of business line. And I think we saw that, or business market, and we saw that with, you know, the levels of sort of trade activity that were going on in the renewable side, particularly on the M&A side. I think, I mean, our approach has always, again, been on, you know, more partnering with developers over a long term period and being there and off taking their projects on a sort of continuous basis, as opposed to participating too frequently in sort of one-off M&A processes where you have, you know, one dealing with a developer and then you move on. So I think our approach is slightly different. So as we kind of moved into the lockdown, a lot of what we were doing was essentially legacy, you know, M&A work with the same parties. And so those relationships are already there. We know the guys very, very well. And you haven't got, you know, a lovely sort of investment bank in the middle, you know, pushing you around. You know, you've got, good relationships with the guys, and you can jump on Zoom calls and have those and get through to the commercials quite quickly. And I think that was a real, you know, a real positive from this period, and that really maintained itself all the way through lockdown and to the current day. And we're seeing now, probably straight after lockdown, we saw a lot of auctions being launched, and a lot of teasers and IMs come across our desk, you know, pretty much straight after lockdown. So those were obviously building up, and then, you know, happened afterwards. But you know, we certainly weren't reliant on those kind of processes to get sort of transactions done, as we had these kind of legacy sort of long-term relationships that kept us kind of going.
Moving to the projects themselves again, electricity demand obviously changing and dropping massively during the heavy lockdown we experienced and across a number of European countries. And obviously that had a knock-on effect onto electricity prices, which, you know, seems to be recovering, that said. But I think there was a feeling that prices were softening for a while now anyway, and people were downgrading their sort of mid to long-term forecasts. So I'm just keen to hear, I mean, firstly from you, Barney, you know, how is that feeding into how you are looking at the business case for projects, particularly as we are in a non-subsidy world, largely, where more merchant element could possibly be expected?
Yeah, I think probably the first point to note is that, I mean, our investment strategy was very much on building out renewables you know, fixed price offtake, and as a result, it means that some of the sort of price softening that you mentioned hasn't really impacted us as severely. But there's no doubt that we've seen those numbers soften. I think what we're also seeing quite interestingly is, on the independent long-term forecast front, is a bit of a divergence in those forecasts. So, you know, there are a number of consultants out there, and you certainly, you know, one or two of the major ones have seen a big softening in their forecasts over the last sort of 6 to 12 months. But then there are others who have maybe sort of maintained slightly, you know, slightly more bullish view. And so it you know, navigating those long-term curves is clearly, you know, is clearly sort of a key focus for, you know, the likes of the, you know, developers and the likes of, you know, ourselves as, you know, long-term financial buyers of those. So it is interesting, and for sure there was a softening. I think, you know, prices fell some 50, 60% or whatever it was in late March, and, you know, those with sort of high degrees of merchant exposure would have felt that. But as you say, there's been quite strong recovery actually in not only the sort of current day ahead kind of pricing, but also in the sort of season ahead and year ahead, 2 year ahead kind of pricing, and it's back to the kind of levels that we were at previously. So yes, I mean it is interesting, but even that volatility in there and the reaction really of pricing to the pandemic, it kind of really kind of makes us a bit more sort of hard nosed in our sort of need and approach of finding that long term offtake, whether it's through corporate PPAs or the like, or other forms of subsidy, which I'm sure we'll cover at a later point in this.
Of course. Well, Gareth, though, but before we do, I mean, interested to hear from you and maybe some of your colleagues who are working on those kind of offtake negotiations. And, is it feeding into that particular area the when prices are jumping around so much and people are kind of maybe looking longer further afield rather and seeing lower prices than perhaps was previously the thinking?
Yeah, well I'd share the comments of Barney in that clearly we saw an immediate collapse in commercial and industrial demand, which put the power price through the floor. It seems to be the case that's causing, and this is a real sort of generalized average, a view of a 20% drop across Europe in prices. And if you look at a number of the funds who are needing to maybe make market statements, some of them are saying that, that there will not be recovery. And indeed, that long-term power price is something they're modeling out to 2050. So overall, I think it's down. Overall, that means returns for everyone are going to be down. What does that mean for those who are in the market writing the PPAs? Well, my view, based on what we're seeing, is that there was an awful lot of corporate PPA work coming through the system, and in many of those instances, there were off-takers involved somehow anyway in those arrangements, but confidence has been shaken, of course, because if you're an FD or an energy purchasing manager, are you going to write a long-term 10-year deal seeing what the current price is at the moment? So I think the way that's kind of come through has it means that other off-takers maybe are hardening on their terms because there just isn't the supply of options out there at the moment. But, that's just anecdotal things that we're seeing coming through. What I would say is that our route to market teams are as busy as they've ever been. And where they're not doing PPAs, they're doing balancing type arrangements. So there's an awful lot going out on inflexibility right now.
Okay. And why don't we jump straight to the CFD then, as you mentioned it, Barney. Obviously, the news came through a number of months ago that there's the potential for onshore wind and solar to return to the CFD process in the UK. There was a consultation that ran a couple of months back. I think it closed in the end of May. Just keen to hear from you guys, what are your expectations on that front? And then perhaps we can delve into some of the effects and impacts that will be felt as a result of, that change. I mean, firstly, Gareth, what are you expecting to see from the CFD changes?
Yeah, well, there's an awful lot of noise around allocation round four at the moment, isn't there? And we're all waiting to see what the outcome is. And I found it's dangerous to predict even a range of outcomes with this. That's something I've learned previously. But the industry, I think, believes that the outcomes are going to be possibly a modified version of two pots or a third pot with offshore wind put into that third pot. We do not know and will not know the detail that will be crucial, of course, which will be what is the amount, by which I mean pounds or megawatt per pot. And what is the overall opportunity? Is it an overall number? Can you have movements between the pots? So it's difficult to know, and we'll see. The government's been spending a lot of money, how much it has left over for this, frankly. In terms of the merchant opportunity generally, I would say that there are some developers who are definitely seeking to configure their projects predicated on getting a CFD, and others who are saying, well, you know, that might be there, but that isn't my investment thesis, so that's a nice to have if we get it. And it may be that the competition is so intense that it isn't, it's not worthwhile. My own view, finally, is that I think that definitely, you know, it's a good tick in the box of bankability to have a project like that. Will it mean that it is worth more? Will it mean that our returns are improved overall? Well, we'll just have to see, won't we? But I'm not convinced of that.
And Barney, Gareth mentioned the investment theses there, and you said just a moment ago, you know, your approach is looking for projects for fixed price offtake deals. Does the CFD kind of fall into that for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's such an interesting area, because I think it took, you know, we've all been sort of pushing for you know, wind and solar, or onshore wind and solar, to be returned essentially to the to the allocation rounds for CFD. So that's obviously welcome. I think, you know, we weren't necessarily expecting, you know, the consultation, which is, you know, and obviously that was great. And so a lot of our plans really have been around, you know, how we do this through the private arrangement. And I think, I guess there's a number of things that are going to be interesting. I think Gareth touched upon the main ones there in terms of, you know, the amount of allocation and buckets and, you know, which pots are going to go where and everything else. I think the other sort of question is around price, and what that delivered price is going to be. And there's going to be a lot of kind of gaming between developers and how that's going to work out. And, I mean, we can touch upon the Irish, results, in a moment, I'm sure, which were very, very interesting. And how that, you know, that might well be an example of how, again, some unexpected kind of results and how that all plays into it. But I guess, from our perspective, you know, what we're seeing on the kind of corporate PPA front is, again, a bit of a split or bifurcation between different types of off-takers, which actually results in slightly different pricing. And again, this might just be anecdotal, but you know, there are different classes of long-term off-takers. There are those who are looking at you know, buying power with the kind of the forward curve in mind, so looking to get a decent deal versus, you know, The sort of medium-term forecast and pricing over a 10-year period, say, or longer. And then you've got the corporates who are, you know, truly looking for additionality, and looking to actually secure power in order to enable new infrastructure to be built. And that's the really interesting thing, because I think, you know, we discussed earlier the fall in power pricing. I think what that sort of seems to have done, at least, you know, through our analysis, has actually put a bit of a premium on, a sort of an additionality premium for those looking for new build. There seems to be slightly different pricing for the sort of additionality, from the additionality off-takers than there is compared to the kind of, call it the more utility or sort of trading business, off-takers who are looking at things and looking to trade the power essentially in the wholesale markets thereafter. And so you look at that sort of delta in pricing and you say then, okay, you've then got the CFD auction coming up for onshore. And then you're going, well, what could that end up, clearing at? You know, you benchmark it against the offshore CFD pricing from earlier this year or last year. And you think, well, the onshore wind projects and technology is typically deemed less, you know, less risky to develop than offshore, so in theory, pricing should be even sort of lower. I'm beginning to consider what it looks like compared to the you know, the corporate arrangements, and you know, whether it looks more like an additionality, and which in theory it should do, given that the CFDs are only allocated to new build, or are they not? And we sort of question whether actually, you know, the corporate route might actually be more lucrative if you can get your head around the credit, you know, the sort of creditworthiness of the offtaker. So it's interesting. It's very, very interesting. And again, it's going to be a lot of kind of, you know, jostling and kind of testing the market to see, you know, the best approach. But, you know, it, for sure that, you know, the CFD will, you know, if the pricing of the CFD is as aggressive as we think it will be, do, it will still work for the largest, most efficient projects. And it's my suspicion that it's actually the huge utility scale, 100 megawatt plus kind of projects that will clear, you know, on the CFD auction, where you can really get below, you know, that sort of levelized cost of energy. And the sort of the corporate world will be focused on, you know, maybe sort of slightly smaller to medium sized projects where corporates have a kind of a fixed kind of load in mind, which is, you know, might be slightly less. So yeah, it will be interesting. I mean, it's a fascinating area, and you know, the economics that sit behind it are extremely interesting.
And just to remind our listeners, so you mentioned offshore wind and allocation round three, so 39 to 41 pounds per megawatt hour. It cleared at in 2012 prices. Then Ireland, the RES auction, in early August, 74 euros per megawatt hour in total. That was solar and wind. So both, I'm just interested, both of you, very quickly, roughly, where do you think, let's say, AR4 has, you know, a reasonable enough allocation for onshore wind and solar? Where closer to the offshore wind in CFD3 or closer to Ireland?
In my view, it comes down to Gareth's point around you know, the amount, the capacity they're going to procure. I think in Ireland, they have very strict amounts of power that they need to, or the infrastructure they need to build. And they need to do that quickly. And I think time was a key factor there, that the way that auction worked was, you know, to get as much procured as quickly as possible. And that, you know, created, you know, a form of competitive tension. I think if the UK, if the GB, auctions are, you know, restricted, sort of much more severely, I think you'll find pricing will be, you know, probably at the lower end.
And Gareth, what about you? I mean, you mentioned you're speaking to people who are perhaps looking at this as something nice to have, and just kind of pursuing a strategy. Others may be going for it, you know, with some gusto. What kind of competition is that going to create and impact on prices?
I'll give you one word answer: low.
Yep.
That's my sense.
I thought you might. To flip it around then, I mean, did you think the Irish prices were higher then? I mean, that's what initially seemed to me. Obviously, it's a first iteration of a new process.
Well exactly. And while Barney said it well, so I don't need to repeat it. But it depends how you set up the auction and what you're trying to procure and how. So I do think that was a different set of circumstances and therefore provoked a different kind of pricing outcome. So things could change. Crikey, they always do, don't they? But I'm not seeing other than a very low outcome. But I'd be delighted to be proved wrong, by the way.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
When I started doing development work in the subsidy phase, I'm not sure that I could have quite understood how successful an industry could be built and how quickly it could be built. And I think that, you know, we're seeing now, don't we, you know, every week we hear about records broken and what storms causing record wind speeds and loads. And if you look back, that's been in, you know, that's been done over a relatively short space of time. And, you know, there's a lot to be proud of. The industry should be proud of that. And I think what's really, really interesting is everyone predicted the demise of coal, and that's happened. But look at gas right now. I mean, I'm not sure any of us could have predicted a couple of years ago the demise of gas, and that feels real right now. So this is going in that direction, and the opportunity in this merchant phase is even greater than it was in the original phase. So there's an awful lot of work to be done, and I just think, you know, there's a fantastic opportunity for many people, and it's a vital part of growing our way out of this particularly nasty economic phase that we're in. So I just think it's a great opportunity and one that we should feel very proud of.
I couldn't agree more with Gareth's comments there. I think, you know, the renewables industry itself has come such a long way. You were talking about maybe less so in Ireland, but here some of those CFD pricing from previous rounds, and you know, you're talking about procuring offshore wind at, you know, 2012 pricing, but £39 a megawatt hour is extraordinary. And you think, again, not necessarily to be negative about you know, nuclear, but you know, we know some of the CFD pricing on some of the big nuclear plants that are being built over the next sort of decade. And whilst you can't compare apples to apples, of course, it's really telling, you know, how far this has come. And you know, the future, I think, looks very, very positive in the sense that, you know, there will be further electrification of what we do, whether it's work from home, whether it's in the kind of automobile sector. The general sort of digitalization of what we do is going to put, you know, I guess, a strain on the energy system, as it already is. And you know, renewables is there and ready to be you know, the source of energy of choice. And I think that's it's great. You know, you look at some of the geopolitical kind of issues in the world right now, and you know, having a domestic source of energy is, you know, we, as that grows and grows, has got to be a huge sort of I guess side effect as well. So it's yeah, it's a very, very sort of, whilst times look dark right now, and you know, and the sort of the suffering that's happening in the world right now, I think there is a real you know, positive outlook, and I think renewables is going to be a kind of real cornerstone for that.
Thanks very much to Barney and Gareth there for their time and insight. The joint venture will return soon with another episode in partnership with Gowling WLG, this time drilling further into the financing market for UK renewables. We also have a number of other episodes in the pipeline looking at all sorts of other topics in both renewables as well as infrastructure, so please do look out for those. In the meantime, don't forget to subscribe if you enjoyed this podcast and haven't done so already. But for now, all that's left for me to do is thank today's guests once more, and thank you for listening. Goodbye.